Hello, and welcome to the Queen's Observatory Fast Radio Bursts. I am Connor Stone, here with my co-host, Nikhil Arora. It is our mission to bring exciting space news hot off the telescope and into your ears. One way or another, the Queen's Observatory has continued its practice of sharing the wonders of the universe since 1857. Thank you for joining us in this long-running tradition. Here at Fast Radio Bursts, we will answer your questions, interview astronomers, and dive deep into breaking research. From low Earth orbit to the clouds of Venus, from Betelgeuse to colliding black holes, it's a big universe to talk about, so let's get started.
And welcome to Queen's Observatory's Fast Radio Burst. I'm your host, Nick. I'm here with my co-host, Connor Stone. Connor, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am great as well. As you might be following, we're going through our Ultra Fast Radio Burst series of dangerous things in the universe, where we have been going through various ways to destroy different structures in the universe. We went through the Earth, then we went to the Sun, and then to the galaxy. And this has been quite a roller coaster of a series where we start really slowly and start to build up to some really crazy, wonky, but fascinating things. I think today's episode will be no different, because we're talking about how to destroy the universe itself. It's going to be quite an interesting episode for sure. However, I think, Connor, you will agree that this comes with some sort of content warning.
Yeah, I mean, destroying the universe can get a bit depressing.
Yeah, it can be a little bleak for sure. Yeah, so all we want to say is I think today's episode has some very interesting scientific things, but if this is not something that you need in your life right now, do feel free to skip this episode. Just as a reminder, we release an episode of the Fast Radio Burst every fortnight, so every 2 weeks, and I can guarantee you that a significant portion of those episodes will be uplifting and promising and fascinating, then bleak, really. Anyways, so that's what's on the docket for us today. Let me just give you sort of an idea of where we are and what we're going to do in the future. So as I pointed out, we are today going to talk about how to destroy the universe, or maybe how the universe will destroy itself today. I don't want to spoil too much, but coming up in the Ultra Fast Radio Burst series, next we're going to move on to the living universe, as we're calling it. Really a pencil title, but this is what we're going to basically be discussing: source, origins, and paradoxes of life in the universe. Really go through why do we have life on Earth? Where else can we find life on Earth? And also, if there is life in other parts of the universe, more specifically our galaxy, why can't we find it? What's the holdup? That's what we have.
The big question of the century, eh?
Exactly. The big question of the century. I mean, that's what we do really here. We really address the big questions. So yeah, that's what we have planned for you in the future. But actually, let's get back to the dangerous universe again. And let's start with an overview. All right, Connor, let's go to really the bottom shelf cookie over here. What is the universe?
Right. So when we say the universe, we really, that's just the word that we mean for everything. Currently, it's about one part matter, all the stuff that you know, 5 parts dark matter, and 14 parts dark energy. If you want to know the recipe for our universe, that's basically what it comes out to right now. Now, there is a distinction when people talk about the universe. They can talk about the universe with a capital U, or the observable universe. And the distinction observable is really just talking about what we can see. Because light doesn't travel infinitely fast, it just travels very fast, we can only see about the speed of light times the age of the universe out, modulo some expansion of the universe, which we'll be talking about. We'll be talking about the expansion of the universe because that plays into the destruction of the universe. But when you're talking about the universe, everything, the cosmos, that's absolutely everything, even beyond what we may be able to see just because of our circumstances. And that thing expands into itself. It's infinite, and there's no larger space that it's expanding into. That's just all of it.
Yeah, cool. Okay. A lot of questions pop up here, but I guess we have to stay on on our course over here. So let's move on next to what does it actually mean to kill the cosmos or the universe?
Right. So if you're talking about everything, you can't, in a sense, you can't kill it, because whatever happens after you do something is still everything. Whatever you change just leaves behind new things, but it's still everything. So what we're going to talk about really is, since the universe is the place where things happen, it's got structure, it's got people in it, it's got things happening in our universe. So we'll talk about a dead universe being a universe where these sorts of things that we think of happening that are the complexity and the beauty of the universe are done. Right. That would be a dead universe.
Okay. So the atoms that comprise, or the molecules, the particles that comprise of the universe are still there, but they're just not participating in any action. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing interesting going on anymore. Yeah.
Cool.
That would be a dead universe.
Okay. Great. So how do we make it dead?
So obviously,
let me guess the first way, really, because we have been following a pattern here.
There's been a pattern, yes.
The first way is wait for it.
Yep, right? You can just wait. Entropy always wins, and we'll talk about entropy as our first way to destroy the universe. People, of course, have, as we've learned more about how the universe works, they have mused about what happens when you turn the dial of time all the way to the end and just crank everything to its maximum. So there's these concepts called the big rip, the big crunch, and the big freeze. We'll talk about those. There's a very interesting concept called vacuum decay, which we'll talk about. And following our pattern from past episodes, I wanted to talk about how you could DIY destroy the universe. Universe destroyer at home. I guess that would be called legendary mode.
let's really take a minute over here, Connor, and sort of grasp on the magnitude of what you're actually saying when you say DIY, destroy the universe here.
Yeah. So doing it yourself, even for any conceivably powerful civilization, just doesn't really make sense.
No.
So instead, we're going to talk a little bit more about how would you avoid the destruction of the universe, and what sort of good news is there at the end of time that we might be able to hold on to. So that's what we'll get into a little more, as opposed to DIY destroy, DIY avoid destruction.
There we go. That's a great plan. So let's get into it. Let's talk about the easiest way, sort of the metaphorical watching the paint dry turned up to 11 here. How do we just wait for the universe to be dead or destroyed?
All right. So following the pattern that we...
Well, actually, no. Let me rephrase this question. Maybe let's start with a bang over here. Well, okay. No pun intended over here. How long do I have to wait for the universe to be destroyed?
How long do you have to wait? So we're talking deep future here. We're talking... most of you will know of Google, the company. But Google, the company, is actually named after a number. It's a 1 with 100 zeros after it.
Yeah.
That's kind of the time scales that we're talking about here. That's how long some of these processes will take place.
Yeah.
We had talked about metaphorical paint drying in some of the other episodes when you had to wait billions of years for things to occur. But a billion years doesn't even factor in. If you try to add a billion years to this time scale, the number stays the same.
And as you might have noticed, Connor over here did not use a unit. And in general terms, I would have been a little annoyed with Connor when Connor just said it might take a Google something for the universe to be destroyed. But over here, seconds, minutes, hours don't necessarily matter. Whether it's a Google of a second or a Google of a minute does not change the picture here. The main picture is that this is really a very, very long time.
Yeah, for sure. It's like a theorist's dream, because not only can they avoid units, the units don't even matter.
Exactly. All right. Okay, so let's dive into the easiest way then. How will, in a Google some unit of time, be the universe destroyed?
Right. So the key concept here is entropy. It's a fancy word that sort of really concretely defines what we mean when we say randomness. I like to picture my bedroom when I was a teenager had a lot of entropy. You could go into the bedroom, move things around, and I wouldn't know it because it was a total mess. If you clean up your bedroom, then if someone goes in there and swaps around a few things randomly, you're going to notice, because there's only a few ways for your bedroom to be clean. But there's many ways for it to be dirty. It can be dirty with a random t-shirt on the floor in one spot and the same t-shirt 2 feet over. It kind of all looks the same. That's entropy. The messy room has high entropy. The clean room has low entropy because there's only a few ways that a room can be perfectly clean. It's not too many options. At the atomic level, we would say that a crystal has low entropy because all the atoms are in a repeating and nice, simple pattern. So you notice when one of those atoms moves out of place. And in fact, a lot of really cool crystal properties come out of atoms being, just a few atoms being out of place.
Yeah.
A gas, on the other hand, has high entropy because the atoms are scattered all over the place. You can move them around randomly and you don't notice a difference in how the gas is set up. If you somehow moved all the gas in a room to one corner, you would notice that. That would be quite spectacular. But there's many, many, many ways to rearrange all of the atoms completely randomly, and you won't notice a difference in the room.
Yeah.
That's what we talk about when we mean entropy. And it turns out that every process, everything that we had talked about that makes the universe alive and interesting, stuff happening, every single process in the universe that happens increases entropy. The sun shining in the sky is a huge ball increasing the entropy of our universe. Down here on Earth, you take a breath in, take a breath out, you've just increased the entropy of the universe. Everything that's happening is adding to the randomness of the universe just because that's the most likely thing to happen at any point. If you act on the universe, chances are that action is going to move things around, and the random elements of that movement ultimately come out to adding to the randomness in the universe. It's a bit of a tricky concept to get your head around, but it's very important for understanding what happens next. Of course, once you've established that something is always going in one direction, always increasing the entropy, you start to ask, okay, well, what happens when we get to the end point? Is there an end point? Can we always increase entropy? Is there a point where entropy reaches a maximum?
Maybe a good place to stop over here and do some review over here, or summarize, maybe that's a better word. Because when we say the entropy of the universe is increasing, it really does mean it's the whole universe. We mean the large scale universe. We don't necessarily mean patches of the universe. There might be isolated places in the universe where the entropy is actually decreasing, but we're not really concerned with that. We're mostly concerned with the overall universe. And that's something to keep in mind, because a question that can pop up is when you look at the universe, you see galaxies forming, and galaxies are structure, and there's only so many ways you can form a galaxy. Therefore, the entropy should be decreasing. And that's actually right. In that local universe, local part of the universe, the entropy is decreasing. But overall, in the full universe, the entropy is increasing. Am I right in saying that, Connor?
That's completely correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
A more down-to-earth example might be if you have a garden and you grow some flowers, you've kind of decreased the entropy. You've created this really unique and special structure that if you disturbed it by a bit, it would be destroyed. Yeah. But in doing that, you have to inject energy. You need sunlight. You need to water it. You need to turn up the soil and keep it alive. And in doing that, you're creating more entropy elsewhere.
Yeah.
So, exactly. As similarly with the galaxy, as the galaxy forms, it may decrease its entropy locally, but over the whole universe, you've actually increased the entropy just elsewhere.
Yeah, fair enough.
You can't get away from it, no matter what you do. So this is going on, and this keeps going on over and over and over again. Stars burn, increase the entropy. Mostly they just heat stuff up, and the hotter a material is, the more randomly and chaotically it moves around. Over time, stars will use up all of the available fuel in their area, and they'll go out. If you look really, really far in the future, at some point, the last star will go out, and then there may be planets left. But the planets are slowly losing their atmospheres. Like, the Earth is slowly losing its atmosphere, but also slowly gaining more atmosphere. So it all balances out right now. But way, way in the future, at some point, it's going to stop gaining atmosphere and just be shooting that atmosphere out into the universe. So at some point, really, really far in the future, what you end up with is essentially an entire universe of a uniform temperature gas that's just everywhere, smoothly spread out, There's no interesting pockets where you've got a galaxy or where you've got a star or a planet with people on it. It's just a uniform gas everywhere. Things get a little weird when you get to this stage because time, in a sense, stops when you've got no change, no increasing entropy. There's no way to tell when something has happened. If you watch a video in backwards time, you can tell that it's wrong, that it's backwards. But if you watch the universe at this stage, forward or backwards in time, it looks the same. And so in a sense, from a physics perspective, time sort of stops existing. There's no past and there's no future.
Right.
It's a very bizarre point in the universe.
Okay. I guess this bizarre point is a good place to take a break. When we come back, we're going to dive into the special ways to destroy the universe, the big freeze, the big crunch, the big rip, and something special called the vacuum decay. We'll be right back.
Hello there. I'm just stopping by to quickly let you know that the Queen's Observatory is always here to answer your space questions. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and our website. Links to all of these are in the podcast description. We're always happy to talk about the universe, and if you ask a really big question, we just might have to do a podcast about it. I would also like to mention some of the other great resources out there. In the podcast description, you will find links to the MacDonald Institute, the Royal Astronomical Society, and the Astronomy on Tap program. They are all excellent programs to bring the universe down to Earth. And with that, let's get back to it.
And welcome back. We're talking about how to destroy our universe in our series, The Dangerous Universe. So as you can imagine, we've reached the highest possible structure that we can destroy. And we just recently talked about waiting for it, waiting for the universe to increase, it become as random as it can be, where actually time has no meaning, which was a weird way to put it. Let's move on to some of the more, let me say, actionable rather than watching paint dry processes to destroy the universe. Specifically, the big rip, the big crunch, and the big freeze. Let's start with the big rip. So this essentially, when we think about the big rip, we're thinking about something tearing itself apart. So what does it actually mean for the universe to tear it apart? Can the universe tear itself apart?
Right. So this is an interesting question. Way back when Hubble and Lemaître discovered that the universe was expanding, an immediate question that comes up is, well, first, what is it expanding into? But that's a tricky question involving infinities. But what happens if we take this further? What happens if the expansion gets faster and faster and more aggressive? Well, if you turn the dials all the way up to 11, you could imagine the universe starting to tear itself apart. First, galaxies would start getting pulled apart faster than gravity can pull them together. Then the galaxy itself would start to break up and stars would move away from each other. Then our solar system would start to get pulled apart. And eventually the big rip would be expanding the universe so fast that it would even shred apart our planet and then the atoms inside of everything that we know. And at some point you'd be left with not even a universe full of atoms, but just shredded up energy everywhere. It would be quite an aggressive process, just tearing apart everything in the universe. However, the good news is, since Hubble and Lemaître's time, we've learned a lot more about how this expansion in our universe works. And as far as we can tell, this is not going to happen. This is one of those scenarios that's just a sort of thought experiment about what happens when you dial some of the numbers all the way up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as you pointed out, this would be one of the thought experiments. Something to keep in mind, both Edwin Hubble and Lemaître were scientists back in the 1920s. And it's been almost 100 years since then. And we have had better equipment, better measurements about the universe. So we have been able to, quote unquote, constrain or better understand, at least to some extent, that the big rip is not going to happen. On the other hand, there are other possibilities that are now open because of these new measurements, if I can say that. So let's move on to those. If it can't rip, can it implode? What about the big crunch, Connor? Talk about that.
So this one also falls in the category of determined that it can't happen. But the idea was, what if you turn it the other way? What if the universe is expanding now, but ultimately gravity is going to win? Everything's going to stop expanding, turn around, and start coming in together. And what that would look like is essentially our Big Bang occurring in reverse. So the idea of the Big Bang is the entire universe essentially being on fire, super hot, and really, really dense. And then as the universe expanded, it cooled, and individual things started to pop out of random fluctuations. Well, the opposite happens here. Everything starts off as individual things that are spread out throughout the universe, but then they get pulled in together. They start to smash into each other and heat up and become more and more dense. And eventually, the entire universe that we can see, the observable universe, collapses into some insanely tiny point.
So
the entire universe itself, a reverse Big Bang, yeah. The entire universe itself is still infinite, but any observable patch, like what we can see from our vantage point here on Earth, would collapse down arbitrarily small. It would be pretty intense. It also invokes a really interesting idea that maybe the universe is in a cycle, constantly going through big bangs and then big crunches and then big bang and then big crunches. And there's various ways that people even today try and figure out how maybe that could be what happens to our universe.
Yeah.
But the standard model that we operate off of right now also says that this big crunch idea is quite unlikely.
Okay. Well, two, I guess, arrows avoided, but I guess we can only avoid these arrows for so long. And I think this is where our rope ends, where we talk about basically the most likely scenario, which is the big freeze. All right. So the cosmic ice age, what will happen, Connor?
The big freeze. Yeah. So this is essentially what we talked about first, with entropy winning out in the end. However, with the added element of our understanding of how the universe expands. And our current understanding is that the universe is expanding. It will also continue to expand faster and faster with time, but only on really large scales. So at some point, we won't be able to see distant galaxies, but our galaxy and some of the nearby ones that are sort of part of our galactic family, those will all be around basically forever for us. But as we said before, over time, entropy always wins, and eventually our pocket of the universe will be disintegrated into gas just by entropy always winning out. So the reason they call it the big freeze, though, is just because everything expands and the temperature of this gas is quite low. It would be a very cold gas. That is sort of the idea.
Yeah, essentially, just think about anything that you have around your house. It's radiating heat. And the way things can actually maintain a temperature is because there's an energy source going on that continues to give off the keep the temperature while radiating heat. But at one point in time, what we're saying over here is in the universe, sort of that energy source, quote unquote, runs out. And after that point onward, you're just radiating heat and cooling down, and to one day cool down to the level where no movement is possible. Remember, physics tells us that temperature and moving fast are essentially the same thing on an atomic level. So if something is moving fast on if some atoms are moving fast, they generally have a high temperature. So if we keep moving fast, we keep radiating heat, we essentially start to slow down because we have no new source and therefore freeze to the end, basically.
Yep. So this scenario is the one which our current model of the universe says is sort of the direction that things are headed. The universe ends not with a bang, but a whimper, essentially.
Exactly.
Everything just sort of gets boring.
Fizzles out, gets boring,
which is quite unfortunate. The good news is there's a lot we don't know about how the universe works. So maybe it could be something else. But I think that's our next topic.
Okay, so yeah, lead us through those esoteric ideas that are not really a part of the big crunch, the rip, and the freeze. Let's move on to vacuum decay. What is vacuum decay, Connor?
Vacuum decay is sort of the worst case scenario for the end of the universe as we know it. So vacuum decay is sort of a confusing set of words. We don't really think of vacuum as decaying. We think more of particles as decaying. One particle may decay into a series of other smaller particles. But for a vacuum, that doesn't really make sense. What you have to think about is that nothing doesn't really happen in quantum mechanics. You don't ever get empty space. There's always stuff going on, and there's always these quantum fields which can't ever get to zero energy. They must always have some amount of energy in them. This idea of vacuum decay comes from some physicists, specifically Katie Mack, who we actually had visit Queen's University one time. Very cool talk. The idea is that what if these quantum fields aren't actually at their lowest state in the vacuum yet? What if there is some sort of switch that could happen, kind of like a chemical reaction where you need to sort of get it going, like you need to get a fire started, but then it'll keep itself going? What if there's something very similar with these quantum fields where they need a nudge in order to get over onto the other side of this potential hill? But once they get going, it's almost like a fire in the entire universe. It would spread out at about the speed of light, pretty much exactly the speed of light, and it would consume everything in the universe that it comes across. When these quantum fields change from one energy state to another, it would release vast amounts of energy, enough to obliterate any sort of object that we currently see in our universe. It would pass past our planet and obliterate the entire Earth at the speed of light, which means you can't even see it coming. You could be looking out at the universe, watching a bunch of galaxies and a bunch of stars twinkle, and then the next second there's a wall of fire in your face moving at the speed of light. There would be no way to see it coming.
Therefore, the content warning at the start of this episode, really.
Yeah, so that could raise some danger flags in our brains. But the good news is that this sort of vacuum decay, destroying the universe, quantum field topic comes entirely out of assuming that our current laws of physics perfectly describe our universe, and then we can just crank through the numbers and you get this sort of consequence. But we know for a fact that our current models of the universe don't fully explain everything. So yeah, the set of particles that were used to construct these quantum fields aren't all of the particles in the universe. We know that there must be other particles we don't know about, and even some of the particles we do know, neutrinos, don't behave the way that they should in our standard model. So you can rest assured that there are still many questions to answer. Vacuum decay is sort of a consequence. What if we just assume we're right and go forward and see what happens?
Maybe another good news over here is that it happens at the speed of light. So really, you won't feel a blip. It's all happened to every place in the universe, and that's it.
Yeah.
So I guess that's good news.
Well, you wouldn't see it coming.
A silver lining, let me put it that way.
This is a bit of a silver lining, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a strange way to think about destroying the universe. It would also release a lot of energy, which would somewhat be similar to a new Big Bang, which is kind of an interesting way to think about it, but it's not quite the same. And it's unclear what the laws of physics would even look like on the other side of that firewall boundary.
Right.
There's some weird things that happen when a vacuum decay occurs. It can sort of change how the vacuum fields work, and it's a mess.
As you pointed out, maybe not something that we might have to worry about.
Hopefully not.
Let's move on to DIY avoided, Connor. What can we do to avoid the end of the universe?
Right. So we talked about the most likely scenario, this big freeze where entropy eventually wins over time and the universe sort of expands to the point that we only have a sort of narrow region of space where we can really interact with. So how do we avoid that? The short answer is you can't. So, more bad news on the destruction of the universe side. The universe takes everything with it because it is everything, and you're kind of stuck along with that. The rising tide rises all boats, but it also can sink all the boats. So at a fundamental level, our existence really depends on transitioning something from a higher energy state to a lower energy state, and so sort of living along the margins of that change in energy. So there's not really anything we can do when the end point of the universe is uniform energy everywhere. There are no high points and low points for us to take advantage of.
Okay, so, well, let me try to make it a little bit more positive. How might we last as long as we can, or as long as possible?
Right. So now we've sort of drilled down to a really interesting question. It took a few layers to get there, but how do we last as long as possible in a universe which we know has an end point of sort of a boring frozen gas? Well, it's really all about managing your resources. In order for life to happen or really interesting things to happen, you have to move from a high energy state to a low energy state. But it doesn't have to be a lot of energy. It doesn't have to be a huge, like, flaming ball of a star. So we discussed in our galaxy destruction episode how a civilization could, in principle, take over every star in a galaxy. It'd be a lot of work, but you can do it.
Right.
And what they could do is use all of this power to actually start to better manage their resources than the galaxy would on its own. They can break things up into gas and only keep a few stars and slowly, one at a time, hop from one star to the next as they build them out of these resources. So you can go for a long time this way, basically managing all of the material in a galaxy. You can even build your stars small, in which case they burn for a long time and very efficiently, using up almost all of their fuel. You can do even better than this if you use this huge amount of energy you have. Again, we're picturing a super civilization way beyond us in technological power. What you can do is actually build your own black hole. And when you build it yourself, you can build it to the size scale that you want. So it just outputs a tiny, tiny amount of energy, and every 100 years or 1,000 years or something, you have to inject a little more material into it, but you've got lots of material. You've got a whole galaxy. And a black hole can perfectly convert matter into energy for you. So if you can build your supercomputer around this black hole that's leaking out a little bit of energy for you, and you, instead of having people, which use lots of power, use a very efficient supercomputer which simulates people, you can actually envision a civilization lasting for a very long time out of this trickle of energy coming out of a black hole. This is probably how you would last the longest.
What?
But my goodness, it's such a bizarre thing to even think about.
My goodness indeed, Connor. Wow.
But again, you're kind of stuck at around that Google of years time limit. Black holes, the biggest black holes in our universe, the supermassive black holes that exist at the center of every galaxy, those will last for a really long time. They will last about a Google years. And that's roughly the sort of limit of what you're going to be able to get with this sort of technique. And that's about the timescale of the end of our universe as well. So you can last a really long time, but you're sort of stuck along with the rest of the universe at the end point there.
Yeah, I guess.
But also,
I guess,
does it really count as lasting at that point?
we went quite far out here, Connor, to some real esoteric corner of knowledge, might I add here. Okay. Well, let's talk about maybe some good news, or if there is any. Is there any good news over here?
Well, so the good news is that all of these scenarios are sort of assuming that we're right about what we know right now and just turning up the numbers and seeing what happens in the end. But the truth is, we really don't know anything at these sorts of timescales. We've never made a measurement, really, which could be applied on that sort of timescale. We're just doing it anyway, because it's just such a far point in the future that really, really unlikely things start to become almost guaranteed. You're almost never going to win the lottery, but if you buy all of the lottery tickets, you're going to win. You will win for sure. And similarly, there are certain lottery tickets of the universe which, given enough time, eventually they will happen. So there are quantum fluctuations which require a certain amount of randomness in our universe. On huge timescales, you could imagine little pockets of quantum fluctuations suddenly generating a local area that has a higher density, a higher energy content than the rest of the universe. And now there's interesting things happening. You have a dense part of the universe and a rest of the universe, which isn't dense. That's a structure. That's an interesting thing in the universe. And over time, these structures can be arbitrarily large because you have arbitrary amounts of time to wait for them to happen. So things on these crazy timescales, you get to think about really, really bizarre and unlikely scenarios as almost guaranteed to happen. So whatever the like ultimate true theory of the universe ends up being, I suspect that over a huge amount of time, there will be some really, really intricate and interesting things to take advantage of.
Fair enough, I guess. Okay. Well, I guess that is a good place to stop here with the fact that we might just win the lottery, given the fact that we're playing this cosmic game of all the chances that it's given enough time. So yeah, I think that's a great place to stop, Connor. Thank you for leading us through this cosmic calamity. and the next time we see you, it would be more uplifting, and it would be talking about something which relates.
We're going to talk about the living universe.
Yeah,
this is the exact opposite of the dead universe. This is going to be much more fun.
Exactly. So that should be a lot of fun indeed. Okay. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Queen's Observatory's Fast Radio Burst. We hope you enjoyed this walk through the universe. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact us via email at queensuobservatory@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter as the Queen's University Observatory to stay up to date. If you like this podcast, you can help us by leaving a review and sharing it with your friends. This will help us become more visible and spread the wonders of the universe to more people. That is all from us. We'll be back again with another exciting topic in astronomy.